Hello, this is Judy, and for the next hour, I will be reading selected articles from the December 8th, 2025 issue of the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. I will do my best to pronounce all words and names correctly, yet please forgive me if I do not. Here is our first article today. The title is TTC to Roll Out Fare Capping. Here's how many times you'll have to use transit to get free rides. The model would give frequent users of the TTC free rides after they reach 47 in 1 month. And it states fare capping allows riders to take free trips after reaching a certain monthly threshold of paid rides. It's a common model used by other transit agencies, including GO Transit, York Region Transit, and MyWay. And that's MIWAY. And there's a picture, and the person taking it was Arlen McDorey, MCADOREY of the Toronto Star. This article was written by Ben Spurr, SPURR, City Hall Bureau Chief. The TTC plans to make it easier for frequent riders to get a break on their fares as the agency moves to a new fare model next fall. Mayor Olivia Chow announced at Victoria Park Station on Monday that starting September 2026, the TTC will institute a, in quotes, fare capping system. That means customers who take 47 rides in a month won't have to pay again for the rest of the month. In a press release, the mayor said the change would help make transit, in quotes, more affordable. No more deciding whether you can afford a monthly pass up front. No more overpaying if you don't ride enough to make a pass worth it, she said. The TTC's current monthly pass cost $156, an amount equal to 47 Presto adult fares. That means that savings for many frequent users under the new system will be minimal. It's anticipated to cost the TTC in the city $3.5 million in 2026. Chow said she had also directed the TTC to come back with a plan to lower the fare capping threshold to 40 monthly trips for 2027, which would benefit more users. Fare capping allows rides to take free trips after reaching a certain monthly threshold of paid rides. It's a common model used by other transit agencies, including GO Transit, York Region Transit, and MyWay. Proponent says it encourages transit use by simplifying discounts and eliminates the burden of commuters paying a large sum upfront for a monthly pass. Ben Spurr is the Star's City Hall Bureau Chief, and it's based in Toronto. You can reach him at email at bspurr@thestar.ca. This article is under business and it is an opinion. The title is Your Retirement Portfolio Ready for an AI Crash? Three Key Moves That Can Help Protect It. And there's a photograph, and it's of the stock market, New York Stock Exchange, and various boards up with different information. And the caption reads, "Traders work on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange as the market opens on November 18th. By some measures, valuations for the benchmark S&P 500 stock index are higher than at any time since the late 1990s tech boom," David Ashton writes. And this photograph was by Spencer Platt, and it's Getty Images. And this article was written by David Ashton, who's a contributing columnist. David Ashton is a freelance personal finance and investment journalist. He has an MA in economics and a chartered financial analyst designation. If you're a retired investor who lives off your portfolio, you're probably concerned about the AI-driven stock market boom that some observers are calling a bubble. By some measures, valuations for the benchmark S&P 500 stock index are higher than at any time since the late 1990s tech boom. While no one can reliably predict what's going to happen and when, that market frothiness raises the odds of a sharp stock market reversal at some point. If a severe correction or bear market happens and you can wait it out without selling stocks, you may avoid lasting damage. But there is potential for serious harm if you find yourself needing to sell stocks at distressed prices to cover your cost of living for an extended period. If you get caught early in retirement by a severe and long-lasting bear market, your continuing stock sales could deplete your portfolio to such extent that it doesn't benefit much when stock prices eventually recover. That phenomenon is known as sequence of returns risk, and in extreme cases can devastate a retiree portfolio. How to create a resilient portfolio that safeguards cash flow. Fortunately, there are several things you can do to create a resilient portfolio that safeguards your needed cash flow. A key goal is to ensure ready sources of cash that avoid the need to ever sell stocks at depressed prices. That gives stocks a chance to recover undisturbed from down markets. Here are three key portfolio actions that can help. 1. Start with finding the right balance between stocks and investment-grade bonds. Then structure your portfolio so you always have sufficient assets that hold their value to use for paying out needed withdrawals, and invest to a degree in assets that generate sizable amounts of reliable interest and dividends. We discuss each of these actions in turn. Start with the right mix of stocks and bonds. Building a resilient retirement portfolio starts with getting the right mix of two core assets, stocks and relatively safe forms of fixed income like investment-grade bonds. Many retirees suit a classic mix of 50 to 60% stocks and 40 to 50% bonds for long-term investing, but it can be more or less depending upon individual objectives, risk tolerance, and other factors. Be cautious about trying to make, in quotes, technical adjustments to the long-term mix based on your take on current market conditions. Trying to time the market is difficult or impossible for average investors, and it is easy to get off track in relation to your long-term objectives. Stocks earn you relatively high expected returns over long periods, but prices are relatively volatile and suffer periodic losses. Bonds provide modest expected returns with more stability, while generally cushioning your portfolio when stock prices are hit hard. Keep most or all of your fixed income in relatively safe forms like investment-grade bonds or government-insured GICs. Invest sparingly in high-yield bonds and other riskier fixed income, since they don't provide as much stability and tend to sell off similar to stocks in plunging markets. Next, identify withdrawal sources that hold their value. Having appropriate amounts of both stocks and bonds sets the stage for smart sourcing of your withdrawals under what's sometimes called a, in quotes, bucket strategy. In its simplest form, it works like this. When stock prices are distressed, source withdrawals from bonds and other relatively safe assets that hold their value. This provides your stocks a chance to recover without being sold off at a bad time. When stock prices are flying relatively high, like now, it makes sense generally to source withdrawals from stocks. That way you realize a good price on stock sales while conserving bonds for drawdowns at other times. If stock prices are at modest levels, draw from both stocks and bonds in combination. It's called a bucket strategy because it involves notionally separating your portfolio into two or more risk-based segments or buckets. More elaborate versions can have three or more buckets and complex rules for moving funds between them. A sophisticated version might be useful in protecting your portfolio against stagflation, which typically involves a weak economy, strong inflation, and, after inflation gets going, rising interest rates. In that scenario, conventional bonds and most stocks tend to get hit hard at the same time. In that case, additional buckets that have a better chance of retaining value might include real assets, assets that pay variable interest or have very short-term maturities, and perhaps U.S. Treasury inflation-protected securities. In other words, the acronym is TIPS, T-I-P-S. A bucket strategy essentially involves a gradual form of rebalancing. Sourcing withdrawals from assets that have done relatively well helps to gradually adjust the asset mix back towards its target. Be cautious about more aggressive forms of rebalancing, such as actively buying stocks at depressed prices and selling additional bonds beyond what's necessary to fund withdrawals. Restraint and rebalancing helps conserve bonds so they can last longer in funding withdrawals in the event a bearish stock market lasts for a few years. Income investing can help cover withdrawal needs. Income investing uses reliable forms of interest and dividends to cover much of your withdrawal needs, thus reducing the need to sell assets. Sticking with the relatively safe forms of fixed income ensures the interest you earn from it is fairly reliable. When it comes to stocks, income investors typically skew their stock choices towards stable blue chip companies that generate reasonably high and reliable dividends that grow steadily. These dividends can generally be counted on even during tough economic times. While dividend stocks have attractive features, having your entire equity exposure devoted to them results in less diversification and minimal exposure to growth stocks. For many retired investors, it makes sense to have a sizable position in dividend stocks, but have other stocks as well. One pitfall to avoid is the temptation to, in quotes, chase yield by buying stocks paying exceptionally high dividends. That typically means the stocks are relatively risky and the dividend is likely to be cut. Next, plan reliable cash flows for at least 5 years. Plan so that you can cover your needed portfolio withdrawals from bonds and other relatively safe sources if necessary for at least 5 years, and ideally a few additional years. That helps you to wait down the markets without being forced to sell stocks or other riskier assets at adverse prices. The overall result is to help ensure that funds necessary to support your retirement lifestyle will keep flowing for as long as needed, even if you encounter a particularly nasty bear market. The next article is titled, Flight Delays Resolved at Toronto Pearson a Day After Airport Faced Resource Constraints. The flow of traffic at Pearson has returned to normal, Nave Canada posted on social media at 12:30 a.m. on Monday. And the delay was caused by resource constraints at Nav Canada, a Canadian air navigation organization, according to a notice posted on social media just after 2 p.m. on Sunday. And there's a file photo with people going somewhere to travel with their suitcases and walking. They are walking. And that photo is by Graham Hughes, and it's the Canadian Press file photo. This article is written by Maya Tustonic, T-U-S-T-O-N-I-C, who is a staff reporter. Delays at Toronto Pearson Airport have been resolved after a day. Passengers traveling through the Toronto Pearson Airport on Sunday faced delays getting to their final destinations caused by, in quotes, resource constraints at Nav Canada, a Canadian air navigation organization, according to a notice posted to social media just after 2 p.m. Our team is moving aircraft safely and as quickly as possible, the organization said. At 12:30 a.m. Monday, Nav Canada posted on X that, in quotes, the flow of traffic at Pearson had returned to normal, while advising passengers to check the status of their flight with their airline. Delays affected 503 flights on Sunday, including 192 flying into or out of the U.S., according to flight tracking website FlightAware.com. 44 were canceled, the site indicates. It's not known if all the flights were affected by the same issue. The resource constraints were a result of staff availability, said Gabriel Bourget, B-O-U-R-G-E-T, Nav Canada's media relations manager. He said a, in quotes, traffic management initiative was triggered Sunday afternoon at Pearson Airport due to the constraint. In quotes, we regret the impact on travelers, airlines, and airport operations, he said in a statement Sunday. Bourget said they were, in quotes, steadily building staffing capacity for the long term. This next article is titled, "The Salmonella Outbreak Linked to Pistachios is Still Ongoing, What You Need to Know." As holiday baking season begins, federal health agencies are warning Canadians that an investigation into salmonella-contaminated pistachios is still ongoing. And this article is written by Hannah Alberga, A-L-B-E-R-G-A, of the Canadian Press. As holiday baking season begins, federal health agencies are warning Canadians that an investigation into salmonella-contaminated pistachios is still ongoing. Since March, 155 people have been reported sick with the bacteria illness after eating various brands of pistachios and pistachio-containing products, some as recently as November. That includes 24 people who were hospitalized. The Public Health Agency of Canada, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and Health Canada say there have been more than 160 recalls, and they are linked to pistachios imported from Iran. It says that while nuts from other countries aren't affected, it's not always easy to determine the country of origin. They are encouraging Canadians to check their cupboards for pistachios, which have a long shelf life, and compare product details to recall notices. A public health notice says not to cook or bake with pistachios if it's not clear where they came from, as heat may not kill salmonella. The CFIA implemented an import ban in September. Last week, it mandated federally licensed importers and manufacturers to hold and test Iran-imported pistachios for salmonella. The federal agencies warned that food contained with salmonella may look or smell normal. This report by the Canadian Press was first published December 8, 2025. This next article is an opinion article about the maple leaves, and the title is "The Maple Leaves, Auston Matthews Might Never Be the Scorer He Once Was, But There's a Way He Can Make Everyone Okay with That." And there's a picture of Auston Matthews slips the puck, and it's a picture of a goalie in the goal, and the caption states, Auston Matthews slips the puck between the legs of Montreal's Jacob Dobies in a shootout Saturday night. Those types of offensive moments from Matthews haven't come as frequently this season, and this photograph was taken by Mark Blinch, B-L-I-N-C-H, and it's Getty Images. And this article is written by Damian Cox, who is a contributing columnist. Damian Cox is a former Star sports reporter who is a current freelance contributing columnist based in Toronto. Any way you cut it, Auston Matthews, doesn't just look the same. It makes you wonder whether we'll ever see that 69-goal sniper the way we once did. In a decade navigating his way around the National Hockey League, the Arizona-born center has never looked less a dominant offensive figure than he does now. Of course, when you start your career with a spectacular 4-goal debut, it's always going to be hard to meet expectations. The Maple Leafs captains was part of a listless attack that was mostly ineffective against a checking game of the Montreal Canadiens on Saturday night. If the officials had whistled down a high stick on Nicholas Roy in the Toronto zone before he sent Scott Laughton, L-A-U-G-H-T-O-N, off on a breakaway, the Leafs might never have scored. Matthews' niftiest moment probably came in the shootout when he cleverly poked the puck through the pads of Montreal goalkeeper Jacob Dobies. Otherwise, Matthews had one shot and seemed largely disconnected from line mates Matthew Knies, K-N-I-E-S, and Max Domi, D-O-M-I. It was one of those nights when Matthews seemed to miss Mitch Marner, his old collaborator. When Matthews burst up the ice and tried to go one-on-three, he turned the puck over, setting up a breakaway the other way. He seemed like a superstar desperately trying to impose his will on the game without success. None of this is to imply that Matthews is still anything less than one of the best 10 forwards in hockey. His defensive game far exceeds that of many top scorers in the NHL, and he's added shot blocking and penalty killing to his arsenal. He has 11 goals this season, second on the team, but only won multiple goal game. His shooting percentage no longer checks in north of the 18%. Where he is physically, we just don't know. Where he can play, when he can play, he plays and plays hard. Matthew is 28 years old now, with 652 regular season games under his belt and a lot of injuries. We're into the second half of his career now, and while his offensive brilliance no longer is quite as blinding as it once was, he's still a number one center and the most important Leafs player outside of the goaltenders. Will that be enough to please the fans and keep media critics off his back? If he wins more playoff games, the answer is yes. Many star players evolve as they travel through the course of their NHL careers. Steve Yzerman, Y-Z-E-R-M-A-N, was a different player in his 30s than he was in his 20s. So was Jacques Lemaire, L-E-M-A-I-R-E. So were Ron Francis and Brett Hull. To imagine that Matthews would simply continue to be the best goal scorer in the game would be to misunderstand the way in which the best come to understand the game and what it takes to win as their careers progress. When Matthews came into the NHL in 2016, we weren't exactly sure what he was going to be after his time with the U.S. under-18 program and an injury-shortened season playing in Switzerland. Would he be a playmaker first and a shooter second, or the opposite? As it turned out, his amazing release became the signature element of his game, and the goals followed. Now, with the organization having been unable or unwilling to retain the splendidly skilled Marner, we have to consider where Matthew's game is headed as an offensive force. He has missed a lot of games over the course of his career and has been sidelined once already in the season. A betting person would suggest that is likely to continue. His role on the team's power play has changed, and a big part of his assignment these days is to try to get the puck to knees so that he is able to realize the offensive potential the Leafs imagined when they gave him $46.5 million last summer. Domi is clearly not able to create chances for Matthews in the way Marner did, and it will be interesting to see whether Easton Cowan, C-O-W-A-N, gets a chance in that role as the season goes along. The Leafs have been playing better lately, keeping the puck out of their own net with heightened efficiency. Despite losing 2-1, they held a good Montreal attack to a single goal in regulation and overtime on Saturday. Third-string goalie Dennis Hildeby, H-I-L-D-E-B-Y, was very good, but he didn't have to be sensational. Even without Chris Tanev, T-A-N-E-V, and Brandon Carlo, the Leafs are defending better than they did in the first 20 games. Matthews, always a plus player, is a big part of that, but the level of his game will always be judged against that monumental 69-goal season. The only escape from that glorious self-imposed trap will be if the team he captains finally overachieves in the playoffs. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The next article is titled, It's Going to Be a Mess, Passengers React as Air Transat Set to Suspend Flights Monday Amid Pilot Strike Notice. In quotes, we understand that this situation may cause uncertainty and concern, the airline said in a statement. And there's a picture of airplanes, and the caption reads, Air Transat has been in negotiations over new collective bargaining agreement since January. And this photograph of the planes and people loading luggage is by Steve Russell of the Toronto Star. This article is written by Mark Coley, C-O-L-L-E-Y, who is a staff reporter, and Maya Tostonic, T-U-S-T-O-N-I-C, staff reporter. Air Transat will begin shutting down its operations and suspending flights Monday as its pilots' union plans to strike, the airline said in a statement Sunday. The Airline Pilots Association, which represents 750 Air Transat pilots, said it plans to go on strike as early as Wednesday morning after its members voted last week 99% in favor of a strike. In quotes, "We understand that this situation may cause uncertainty and concern," the airline statement said. "Negotiations are ongoing, and our goal remains to reach an agreement so we can maintain our flights as much as possible and minimize disruptions for you." Air Transat's statement on Sunday, following the receipt of the strike notice, told passengers that there would be an immediate impact on operations. Air Transat must immediately begin planning for the cancellation of its flights and the repatriation of passengers, crews, and aircraft to prevent them from being stranded abroad if the strike occurs. "The goal is to bring everyone back to their point of origin," the statement says. Consequently, flight cancellations will begin progressively on December 8th with a complete suspension by December 9th. When Air Canada flight attendants went on strike in August, the airline warned it would take up to 10 days after reaching a tentative agreement for regular service to resume. Air Transat has been in negotiations with the union since January, but the two sides have failed to find common ground. The union says it is holding out for job security, better working conditions, higher compensation, and improved quality of life. Both sides have accused the other of failing to put its weight in the bargaining process. In quotes, "No pilot wants to strike, but Air Transat management has left us no choice," union representative Bradley Small said in a statement. In quotes, "Months of unproductive bargaining ends now. If we cannot reach an agreement, management will be responsible for every canceled flight and stranded passengers." Meanwhile, Air Transat said that the strike is, in quotes, "premature given progress in negotiations." The airline says it has offered pilots a 59% salary increase over 5 years and improvements in working conditions. "It is regrettable that the union has expressed such indifference towards Transat, its employees, and clients by choosing the path of a strike at this time of the year, a reckless decision that does not reflect the state of negotiations," Human Resources Chief Julie Lamontagne said, and that's L-A-M-O-N-T-A-G-N-E. When asked last week, Federal Jobs Minister Patty Hajdu, H-A-J-D-U, did not say if the government would intervene to avoid disruptions during the holidays. "Federal mediators are at the table with negotiators," Hajdu said. "These are all hypothetical questions," she said. "What I know is the best deals are the ones that the parties arrive at together." During the Air Canada strike in August, Hajdu requested that the Canadian Industrial Relations Board end the strike and send the parties to binding arbitration. The board ordered flight attendants to return to work the next day, but the union defied the order. Air Transat's operating company, Transat AT, has struggled in recent years to turn a profit and overcome its sizable debt, although it made a deal earlier this year to reduce its debt by more than half to $334 million. It is still dealing with customers willing to spend less and an engine recall that has grounded four of its 43 planes. Flight cancellations could leave thousands of passengers stranded during the busiest time of the year for air travel. Allier, M-C-A-L-E-E-R, who lives in Lafar, Ontario, about an hour east of Ottawa, is scheduled to fly to Cancun with her husband on Air Transat on December 16th for vacation. Even if the strike is short-lived, McAleer is worried her flight will be interrupted by cascading cancellations. "Is my flight going to be what it originally was, or am I going to be bumped because somebody else has been bumped the day before?" she said. "I'm assuming it's going to be a bit of a mess." Steph Hunt, a hairstylist who lives near Peterborough, Ontario, is set to fly to Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, on December 17th for a vacation with her husband and two children. Because the trip is a package deal with Transat, she anticipates getting a full refund if it's canceled, but rescheduling the trip will be more difficult. Both she and her husband, an electrician, had to coordinate time off work. Her daughter has hockey playoffs and school exams. If she needs to reschedule, the trip might not happen until February or later. Very disappointing, Hunt said, but I understand where the pilots are coming from. Let's hope it's a very quick strike. Danielle Beauvais, B-E-A-U-V-A-I-S, an Air Transat customer, has been on vacation in Cuba for 2 weeks. He planned his trip in August, when the last thing he would have expected was for a potential Air Transat pilot strike to begin right as he prepared for his return. Beauvais's return flight to Montreal is scheduled for December 12th. With a potential strike, though, Air Transat has told customers to rebook their flights with another airline. For Beauvais, that option would prove laborious. It would mean leaving from Santa Clara, the airport here, to Miami, which is the only flight departing from Cuba. From Miami, I would pass through Philadelphia or another place. It would take 2 full days before I would get to Montreal, he said from his vacation spot. I don't want to take leadership on Air Transat's problem, he said. It's on them to find solutions, not me. The nearly 40 active plane in Air Transat's fleet ferry tens of thousands of passengers on more than 500 flights each week, according to figures from aviation data platforms. Circulum, CIR, IUM, and CHA, CH-Aviation. This article is about the United States, and it states the title is Paramount Goes Hostile in Bid for Warner Brothers, challenging a $72 billion offer by Netflix. The takeover attempt means Paramount will go straight to Warner shareholders with a bid worth about $74.4 billion or $30 per share in cash. And this article is written by Michelle Chapman of the Associated Press. Paramount on Monday launched a hostile takeover offer for Warner Brothers Discovery, initiating a potentially bruising battle with rival bidder Netflix to buy the company behind HBO, CNN, and DC Studios, and the right to reshape much of the nation's entertainment landscape. Emerging just days after top Warner managers agreed to Netflix's $72 billion purchase, Paramount's bid seeks to go over the heads of those leaders by appealing directly to Warner shareholders with more money, $74.4 billion, and a plan to buy all of Warner's businesses, including the cable business that Netflix does not want. Paramount said its decision to go hostile came after it made several earlier bids that Warner management, in quotes, never engaged meaningfully with the following the company's October announcement that it was open to selling itself. In its appeal to shareholders, Paramount noted its offer also contains more cash than Netflix's bid, $18 billion more, and argued that it's more likely to pass antitrust scrutiny from the Trump administration. Netflix on Monday said it had no comment about Paramount's challenge, but on Friday, Netflix downplayed concerns that regulators would oppose a combination of Netflix and Warner's HBO Max streaming business. The fight for Warner drew strong reaction in Washington, with politicians from both major parties picking sides and citing the likely impact on streaming prices, movie theater employment, and the diversity of entertainment choices and political views. Over the weekend, President Donald Trump weighed in, too, saying a Netflix-Warner combo could be a problem because of the size of the combined market share. Paramount, run by David Ellison, whose family is closely allied with Trump, said it has submitted 6 proposals to Warner over a 12-week period before the latest offer. In quotes, "We believe our offer will create a stronger Hollywood. It is in the best interest of the creative community, consumers, and the movie theater industry," Paramount Chairman and CEO David Ellison said in a statement. He added that his deal would lead to more competition in the industry, not less, and more movies in theaters. Adding to the political intrigue in the dueling bids, a regulatory document released Monday stated that an investment firm run by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, would be investing in the Paramount deal too. On Friday, Netflix struck its deal to buy Warner Brothers Discovery, the Hollywood giant behind, in quotes, Harry Potter and HBO Max. The cash and stock proposal is valued at $27.75 per Warner share, giving it a total enterprise value of $82.7 billion, including debt. The transaction is expected to close in the next 12 to 18 months after Warner completes its previously announced separation of its cable operations. Not included in the deal are networks such as CNN and Discovery. The federal government has the authority to kill any big media deals if it has antitrust concerns. Trump said he will be personally involved in the decision regarding Warner Brothers. Usha Haley, a Wichita State University professor who specializes in international business strategy, said Paramount's ties to Trump are notable. Ellison is the son of longtime Trump supporter Larry Ellison, the world's second richest person. In quotes, he said he's going to be involved in the decision. We should take him at face value. Haley said of Trump, in quotes, for him, it's just greater control over the media. The bid for Warner Brothers comes on the heels of Paramount's October purchase of the news and commentary website, The Free Press. Paramount then installed the site's founder, Barry Weiss, W-E-I-S-S, as the editor-in-chief of CBS News, saying it believes the country longs for news that is balanced and fact-based. It was a bold step for the television network of Walter Cronkite, Dan Rather, and 60 Minutes, long viewed by many conservatives as the personification of a liberal media establishment. The network placed someone in a leadership role with a reputation for resisting orthodoxy and fighting woke culture. Paramount's tender offer is set to expire January 8th unless it's extended. Shares of Warner Brothers jumped nearly 4% and Netflix was down 4% Monday in early afternoon trading. Paramount was up 9%. This article is titled Life Brand Cough Syrup Recalled After Certain Bottles Improperly Stored. Health Canada said Friday that the mucus and phlegm relief extra strength cough syrup bottles are on a recall notice for being stored beyond recommended temperatures. And there's a picture with Health Canada in the front, a photograph, and the caption reads, Health Canada advises anyone who has purchased or used the Life brand cough medicine to check the lot numbers on the bottles included in the recall. 12487, 12525, 12684, 12530, and 12691. And this photograph is taken by Sean Kilpatrick, and it's a Canadian Press file photo. And this article is written by Justin Ball, who is a staff reporter. With cold and flu season underway, a popular cough medicine is being recalled by Health Canada. Certain bottles of Life brand mucus and phlegm relief extra strength cough syrup were listed for recall by the health agency on Friday after concerns they may have been stored outside recommended temperatures. The product lot numbers associated with the recall are 12487, 12525, 12684, 12530, and 12691. Anyone who has used the recall product should consult their healthcare provider before discontinuing use of the product, Health Canada said in the recall notice on Friday. Any side effects from using the cough syrup can be reported to Health Canada, according to the alert. The notice has been labeled a type 2 recall, meaning the product may cause short-term, in quotes, adverse health consequences, according to the government agency. And Justin Baugh is a staff reporter with the Toronto Star. He can be reached at jball@thestar.ca. This article is about the Blue Jays, and the title is, This 8-Year-Old Missed George Springer's ALCS Winning Homer to Go to the Hospital. Then he got to meet his Blue Jays idol. Michael Gomes, G-O-M-E-S, sometimes finds himself in excruciating pain and unable to stand. But a moment last week was miraculous, his mom said. And there's a picture of Michael Gomes, there's a photograph, and the caption reads, Michael Gomes, right, missed George Springer's mammoth Game 7 homer that sent the Blue Jays to the World Series. What he got last week more than made up for it. And it's a picture of young Michael, and I believe that might be George Springer. And this photograph was taken by Nick LaChance of the Toronto Star. And this article is written by Mark Coley, who is a staff reporter. Michael Gomes was waving his rally towel and cheering hard at Game 7 of the American League Championship Series when he told his mother he needed to go to the hospital. The 8-year-old Blue Jays fan had been in and out of the hospital for a year and a half with an undiagnosed condition that sometimes left him in excruciating pain and unable to stand. Rogers had gifted Michael and his mom, Ari, tickets to the game in Toronto, but they had to leave early. Innings later, from a bed at the Hospital for Sick Children, Michael and Ari watched on a phone as George Springer hit the home run that sent the Blue Jays to the World Series. Because of his condition, Michael missed it at Rogers Center. What he got last week more than made up for it. And there's another picture of George and Michael's mom, and it's them watching the play. And the caption reads, This 8-year-old missed George Springer's homer to go to the hospital. Then he got to meet his idol. And this photograph is by Lance McMillan of the Toronto Star. On Wednesday, Springer surprised Michael with a meet and greet, and they rewatched his Game 7 home run together. Mile wide as Springer bounced around the bases and celebrated in the dugout. For Springer, it was his first time watching the moment back in full. For Michael, it just might be the coolest thing he's ever done. In quote, when our life is surrounded by a lot of those medical things, Ari said, in quote, to have moments like this kind of just blow them up. And they kind of just push everything away for a moment to give space for happy, enjoyable memories. It's miraculous, to say the least. And the next picture is a picture of Michael with his mom. And it says the caption, and they're smiling together. And the caption reads, Michael's illness began with a trip to Cuba a year and a half ago. Doctors have been unable to diagnose a cause. It's brutal for him, his mother, Ari, said. And this photograph was taken by Nick LaChance, Toronto Star. Michael's illness began with a trip to Cuba. He was always active, doing gymnastics, playing tennis, running around the soccer field, and up and down the basketball court. But after the trip, he wasn't right. His parents took him to the hospital. Initially, the doctors suggested Michael might have vertigo. In quotes, he talks a lot, he's animated, and he's very active, Ari remembered telling the medical staff. He's kind of laying there not talking. I'm like, no, it's something more serious. Eventually, after being transferred to Sick Kids, Michael was diagnosed with meningitis. After months of treatment and rehab at Holland Bloorview Hospital, he was practically back to his normal self. Then the decline began again. The swelling in his brain returned, and he went back to Sick Kids, then back to Holland Bloorview, then back home. The cycle has been ongoing since, and the doctors haven't been able to diagnose why. It's brutal for him, Ari said. There are days when he's running and he's playing, and then he just collapses. And there's weeks where he's in excruciating pain, and there's nothing we can do to help it. Ari leaves emergency bags by the door and in the family van, packed with medication, syringes, vomit bags, and heat packs. Michael worries in class at Danforth Gardens Public School in Scarborough of the pain in his legs and in his head and whether he'll need a wheelchair that day. It has filled the gnomes' life with barriers they never imagined facing. And their last name is spelled G-O-M-E-S. And as the Jays barreled into and through the playoffs, clinching the AL East and dominating the Yankees in the American League Division Series, Michael was back on the medical merry-go-round. He got IV after IV, and the dots from injections now cover his hand, and was losing some of his unending enthusiasm. "I don't want to be in pain anymore," Ari recalled him saying. "As a mom, I can't take that away, but maybe I can find something to bring him joy." And there's a picture of Michael at a Blue Jays game, and he holds up a sign, and he holds up a sign, and the caption reads, "Michael holds a sign for his sister, Michaela, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-A, at Game 7 of the ALCS. He watched Springer's home run from a hospital bed." And this picture was taken by his mom, Ariel. Ariel began emailing anyone she could find at Rogers. At work, the company gave her two tickets to Game 7 against the Seattle Mariners on the third baseline as part of their Beyond the Seat program. But she and Michael missed the home run until December 3rd when Rogers brought them to meet Springer. "Can I have a hug?" Michael asked when Springer walked in. Springer, of course, obliged. Michael asked him his favorite color, if he plays video games, and when he first played baseball. And they relived the magical home run, the biggest in Toronto in more than three decades, the one that put Toronto up 4-3 in a do-or-die game. In quotes, "To get to sit here and kind of enjoy these moments with this guy right here and see him smiling and happy," Springer said, "it means the world to me as a player." Michael brought Springer a gift, a tumbler his mom had made, plastered with photos of Springer. Springer gave Michael a signed jersey and signed baseball. "What did Michael plan to do with the baseball?" "Hit it," he said. "Michael wants to grow up to be a baseball player." Springer, it should be said, approved. And Mark Coley is a Toronto-based general assignment reporter for The Star. You can reach him via email, @thestar.ca. This next article is in the business section, and the title is "Average Asking Rents Fall for the 14th Straight Month to $2,074 in November Report." Asking rents in Canada were down 3.1% in November from a year earlier to an average of $2,074, marking the 14th straight month of annual declines. And this article is by the Canadian Press. Asking rents in Canada were down 3.1% in November from a year earlier to an average of $2,074, marking the 14th straight month of annual declines. The latest monthly report from rentals.ca and Urbanation says average asking rents were also down 1.5% month over month, the largest such drop of 2025. Asking rents for purpose-built apartments moved 2% lower year over year to an average of $2,060, while asking rents for condominium apartments fell 3.7% year over year to $2,157. Measured by province, average apartment rents declined in every region except Saskatchewan and Nova Scotia last month, with the sharpest declines recorded in BC at 6.4%, Alberta at 4.3%, and Ontario at 3.5%. The report says rents are now at the lowest level since June 2023. However, average asks are still 3.4% higher than 3 years ago. Urbanation President Sean Hildebrand says he expects rents to continue trending down in the coming months amid a typical seasonal slowdown, along with a demand pullback associated with flatter population growth and ongoing economic uncertainty. And this report by the Canadian Press was first published December 8, 2025. This next article is your guide to the most festive Christmas markets in the GTA. Head out to browse local vendors, sample delicious treats, and soak up the joy of the season. And there's a picture, and it's all festive lighting, and people are walking, and it says, the Distillery District Winter Village transforms this pocket of Toronto into a holiday wonderland. And the photograph was taken by R.J. Johnston of the Toronto Star. And this article was written by Femi Duadu, D-A-W-O-D-U, staff reporter. The holidays have arrived, and so have the familiar pleasure of Christmas markets lighting up the GTA with their handmade ornaments and gifts, steaming hot drinks, and twinkling trees. Making the market rounds is an easy, enjoyable way to slip into the season. To help you choose which ones to visit, here's what to expect at some of the most popular Christmas markets in and around the GTA. First one is the Distillery Winter Village. And the Distillery Winter Village has been making downtown sparkle since 2010. Since it began in 2010, this holiday market has exploded into a massive seasonal event that stretches across the red brick lanes of the city's Victorian era distillery district. Over a million visitors are expected this year. Now called the Distillery Winter Village, it blends old school charm with immersive holiday installations. At the heart of it all stands a 55-foot silver fir Christmas tree, decked out with more than 80,000 lights and hundreds of ornaments. After the holidays, the tree is destined for Habitat for Humanity, GTA, to help build new homes. That's cool. This year's Winter Village offers 40 food stalls, 9 themed outdoor bars, and a new, in quotes, chef's lane spotlighting some of Canada's top chefs. 50 vendor cabins are stocked with handmade jewelry, unique gifts, fashion pieces, and festive treats. For families and Instagrammers alike, the Narnia-themed Santa's Village inside Soul Pepper Theater's lobby has been transformed by OCAD University students into an enchanting winter forest, all snow-dusted pines and shimmering crystal lights. Highlights include the, in quotes, Stranger Things Upside Down installation, Pop-in Clicks, Bustling Photo Spot, the Vintage Alley Press newspaper stand, and the Candy Cane Wreath at Peppermint Patio. On opening night, the market raised $56,500 and made donations to Toronto Star's Santa Claus Fund, among other local charities. And it's until, the dates are until January 4th, and it's daily. And tickets are required after 4 p.m. on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays and Sundays, also daily from December 15th through December 31st. Free entry from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. General admission is $15. Kids 9 and under enter free. And the next is the Alora Christmas Market. And the Alora Christmas Market features more than 80,000 twinkling lights and 150 Christmas trees. A little further afield, held in what many call Ontario's prettiest town, Alora Christmas Market stretches over 12,000 feet of cobblestone streets under a canopy of more than 100,000 twinkling lights. Located 90 minutes from Toronto, it's a perfect holiday trip. The whole village turns festive with over 150 Christmas trees, some reaching 15 feet high, lining the walkways. A living, rooted 35-foot tree shines at the center of the celebrations. The cedar chalets are packed with vendors, every single one new to the market this season. Visitors will find artisan candle makers and hand-painted ornament crafters, local gluten-free bakeries, comfort food stalls serving sourdough pizza and challah burgers, freshly baked donuts, and hot specialty drinks. At fire tables and muskaka chairs, warm with patio heaters, you can sip and snack while enjoying live music and holiday performances. And the dates are until December 25th, and they're open Wednesdays through Sundays, and this is free admission. next to the Mississauga Festival of Trees. The Festival of Trees is an arts-forward holiday celebration that brings together a vibrant market, live music, and creative installations under one historic roof in the Small Arms Inspection Buildings in Mississauga. This year, visitors can take part in the new Market Passport Program, collect stamps at the markets for shot-at prices. Commission-owned artwork by Ontario artists turns the space into an immersive forest, while hands-on workshops invite you to try everything from cookie decorating to DIY crafts with local makers. The holiday market features over 80 artisan and culinary vendors each weekend. As you browse for gifts and treats, live performances from local musicians fill the building with festive tunes. Admission is pay what you can, and proceeds go to the Creative Hub 1352's Arts and Community Programming. Guests can give back by donating mittens or non-perishable food at the Mitten Tree, helping support local families through the Compass Food Bank. And the dates on this are December 12th through the 14th, and pay what you can, and it's free parking. And next is St. Lawrence Winter Market. The St. Lawrence Winter Market transforms one of Toronto's oldest landmarks into a lively holiday hub. This year brings free photos with Santa on weekends, roaming carolers, vibrant singing sheep making their return, and Friday night jazz. There's also a carousel, a synthetic ice rink, and outdoor film screenings with the Ontario Outdoor Picture Show. There's also a massive weekend's maker market under a white tent at Jarvis and Espalade, Espalade, featuring more than 75 artisans and food vendors. Expect apple fritters, roasted chestnuts, handmade glass jewelry, gourmet chocolate, Jamaican patties, and churros from Chef Ilya Hierra, H-E-R-R-E-R-A. It's open until December 23rd, Thursdays through Sundays. And tickets are free admission. Skate rentals are pay what you can, with proceeds going to Second Harvest. Holiday Hills at Stacked Market, and that's S-T-A-C-K-T. Holiday Hills transforms Stacked Market into one of Toronto's most playful winter destinations. The shipping container market is filled with immersive light displays, oversized insulation, and a photo-ready light tunnel. A rotating lineup of vendors and pop-ups will offer handmade goods and small batch treats, a speakeasy-style espresso martini bar, mulled wine stands, and street food stalls. Weekend activities include family-friendly workshops, live performances, curling lanes, and dog-friendly events. And this is until December 28th, and this is free admission. And another wonderful way to participate in the season's joy and help spread the festive magic is by donating to the Toronto Star Santa Claus Fund. Donate now to help volunteers deliver gift boxes of presents, winter items, and treats to children across the city. And you can donate, how to gift it, it's to donate by Visa, MasterCard, or Amex using our secure form, which is thestar.com, and then it's CSCF. It's at backslash. So let me state this again. thestar.com/SCF. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the December 8th, 2025 issue of the Toronto Star. Your reader has been Judy, and thank you so much for listening to me, and I hope you take great care of yourself and have an amazing day. Thank you so much.